Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What if you could see what's happening inside your body? Prenuvo's whole body scan screens for hundreds of conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one, all in under an hour. And now, you can go beyond imaging with 80-plus blood biomarkers that help complete the picture. This Labor Day, save $300 off your scan when you book at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com. Save $300 now through September 8th at prenuvo.com. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, y'all. Welcome to episode number 25, Sal Sports and Stuff. Good to talk with you again. In case you didn't know, I'm actually hosting on WGR all week, filling in for Howard Simon on the morning show with Jeremy White. So you get a double or triple or whatever dose of me, not only here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, but also on the radio every morning, 6 to 10, Monday through Friday this week. And with no sports going on, no live sports, we still have plenty to talk about, though. The NFL schedule is going to be released later this week, I'm assuming, guessing right now, on Thursday. Not too sure about that. If you haven't checked out the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast, I believe it was episode 19 I did with Mike North, one of the head schedule makers for the NFL. Fascinating stuff, what goes into this schedule making for the NFL. So go check that out. We'll see. I expect the Bills to get plenty of national love, primetime games included. And I'm glad the NFL has decided to release the schedule in its full form, 17 weeks, assuming a regular schedule with all the start times. And then, if something does change, they can release it. But I think this is the best way to do it, not to have two or three versions out there at once, and everybody's kind of picking through, what are we going to use? Just do this one version. Hey, this is what it's going to be. And if things change, things change. They go back, and they make those changes. So we're looking forward to seeing that and talking about that on WGR. We do a mystery guest on the morning show on WGR, Howard and Jeremy do, and we did that again on Monday morning. Daryl Talley joined us. So go check that out. It is, this year is the 30th anniversary of the Bills going to their very first Super Bowl, 25, of course, against the New York Giants. It was the 1990 season. This is the 2020 season. So we had Daryl Talley on to talk about those teams, that era, that team, and then just life in general with Daryl, which was always, he's always fun to talk to. Spider-Man, of course, in Bill's lore because he wore the Spider-Man spandex on his arm. And then we have another mystery guest coming up on Wednesday. Can't reveal who that is at this very moment. Also found out, of course, that Don Shula died on Monday. Right after we got off the air is when it happened. And interestingly enough, it happened as I was recording my podcast that you're about to hear with this next guest. And it's the first time I've done a podcast where during the middle of it, some sort of news happened where I had to say, hey, this just happened. What do you think about it? So we do that with Dan Wetzel. I do that. And Dan Wetzel is my guest. He is a columnist, sports reporter, writer. He's involved with documentaries, filmmaking, everything you can imagine on the sports landscape. Dan Wetzel has been and is involved with it. And the reason why I reached out to him is I was watching a really cool documentary called The Scheme recently about the FBI investigation into college basketball. And Dan Wetzel kept popping up where they kept interviewing him about this. And he had a lot of really good insight into what was going on. So, you know, I went and I looked at his Twitter feed and I noticed some other projects he had done that I didn't realize, some books he had written. And then I realized he also was the executive producer, the executive director of the Aaron Hernandez documentary on Netflix that I watched just a few months ago. And I thought that was fascinating. So I said, I should reach out to Dan, kind of talk to him about a lot of these things. He has a lot of opinions on college football and college basketball and the landscape of it right now with the, you know, legalities of paying players, not paying players, the likenesses and the things and the rules they've been changing. He's talked a lot about the BCS and the format and what, you know, should be done about determining a national champion. So we get into all of that on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. It's Dan Wetzel who is my guest. Yahoo Sports columnist, author, screenwriter. Hope you enjoy it on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast.
Dan, thanks for doing this today. I really appreciate it. I've admired your work for a while, and what triggered me wanting to get you on was I was actually watching the documentary The Scheme, and you showed up again, and I'm like, man, this guy's everywhere. He's had his hand in a lot of things, and a lot of really good work you've done out there, obviously, but just stuff that I think that you could really lend some perspective on, so thanks a lot.
Well, I appreciate it. Always good to be on with you, and always good to be on in Western New York.
Yeah, thanks. What do you know about Western New York? You been up here a lot?
I've been some, I guess. I don't know what a lot. I've been to half dozen Bills games.
There you
I've been
go.
To cover the old Metro Atlantic tournament. Well, I don't know if it's old, still
yeah,
going.
That's I mean, right.
Not this year, but they used to host it in Buffalo a lot. I don't know if they're still there a lot, and got a lot of St. Bonaventure and Tanisha's friends and stuff like that. So.
No doubt, and I know you're big into college basketball and everything that surrounds it. So I want to start there, and what happened recently with the new rules in college sports for allowing athletes to profit off their likeness and things like that. Obviously, it's a pretty big change in where we had been. Is it a change enough? Because we see where this thing is going. Have they done enough to get to a point where? You know, I guess either A, you think this is a good change and where we need to land, or is there a lot more work to be done?
Well, there's still details to be ironed out, and it still needs to officially pass some kind of national convention vote. So there's a lot of layers to NCAA bureaucracy, as you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not there yet, and there's still more to find out exactly how they're handling the details, which is, of course, where. The devil will be. I think it's a positive, but mostly I just think it's inevitable. And one of the issues that college sports has had is it just has lacked a cohesive leadership and a willingness to change slowly with the times over the last few decades. And because of that, the basics of the rules were written in like 1930, and certainly they haven't really changed a whole lot since the 60s or 70s. And it's just a totally different world we're in now. And so I kind of look back to, it was 11 years ago that Ed O'Bannon, the UCLA great, filed a lawsuit against the NCAA about them using his name, image, and likeness in an EA Sports video game. And saying, you know, you shouldn't have permission to do that and then the ability to profit off me for perpetuity, which is what the NCAA said. And their initial response was, while there is a team on the game that's called the 1995 UCLA Bruins, and there is a guy with a shaved head who looks exactly like you and wears number 31 and shoots the ball lefty like you, and is the starting small forward or whatever position he played, that's not you. And then it was, well, even if it is you, we just have that right. And, you know, I think when you come up with a rule or some concept that, well, we own your rights forever, you know, at some point you go, well, wait a minute. I mean, I'm now in my 30s. There was another, I don't know if there was a lawsuit, might have been. If not, it was just a flare-up of a controversy of Oscar Robertson. Complaining that like 40-something years after he left the University of Cincinnati, they're still selling supposed game-worn jerseys of him and things like that. And, you know, it's like at what point is too much? It's sort of the pigs get fed, hogs get slaughtered. And the NCAA just would fight. You know, there just was no wiggle room, which I thought were fairly common sense and some positions that were unpopular with the public. And I just think over the years, as that eroded that public confidence in the rule book, eventually the politicians followed. And what we have was the state of California, the state of Florida, and a number of other states passing laws in the last couple of years saying you can't do this anymore. And the NCAA just hadn't gone along and met with the times. And I think anybody who owns a business or anyone could imagine owning a business, the last thing you want is the government running your business or telling you mm-hmm. how you have to run your business. Even well-intentioned politicians, you don't want. And so This is what they did, though. They forced that hand, and now here they are trying to figure it all out in like one giant swoop instead of a slow kind of off ramp into this. And I'm not sure if they had just sat there and said, you know what, we're going to form some kind of former players union and or some kind of consortium where you're 35 years old and your name's in the video game, you get a couple bucks. That we get to this, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
It was inevitable, and it's going to be messy and difficult and worse than it would be, harder than it would be, but I think it's all the NCAA's fault.
Yeah, no doubt. And I would say there's two big criticisms, obviously. There's a lot more than that, but there's two that come up a lot. What would be the defense of these? Number one is when people first say, well, these guys get a free education anyway. That's the number one overall arching blanket defense that people want to use or criticism when these things happen. The other is, well, how are you going to keep the boosters out of it and say, well, if you come here, I'm going to give you $5,000 every time you sign an autograph. You know what I mean? Like, how do you legislate that?
Yeah, this is the problem. Well, they do get a tuition, room, and board, and that is, you know, compensation.
Mm-hmm.
In a legal sense, they'd actually have a better argument at Division III or something where you say, well, we don't pay them anything. What I'm saying is we do pay them. This is what the cap of our pay is. And look, everybody who knows anything about college knows it's a valuable thing, not just the monetary of the dollars, but the opportunity. And, you know, often that opportunity comes, you know, you get a bonus, you can get into a better school if you're a good athlete. It's just the way it works. So, all very, very real. But what we also know is that isn't what they're worth on an open market. And, you know, they just had the federal college basketball kind of corruption trials. And in one of those cases, there was a kid from Saginaw, Michigan, Brian Bowen. And his dad sat on the stand for 2 days and talked about all the offers that were given him. And the one that he agreed to was he was paid $20,000 to play high school, to play AAU basketball for a summer. By Adidas. And when he was choosing his school, Adidas was willing and started to pay his dad $100,000 to go play at University of Louisville because Adidas sponsors Louisville. So that's his market. You should get paid whatever the market allows, right? So just because there's something called minimum wage out there doesn't mean that everybody should have to be, that shouldn't also be maximum wage. That's not how it works in this country. So while tuition, room, and board is not inconsequential or inconsiderable, which I totally agree is, going to be a ton of money, you also can't look and say, well, if this kid, you never heard of Brian Bowen, and he's worth $100,000 demonstrably, what's Zion Williamson worth? what's Tua Tagovailoa worth?
Right.
You just go to these things. So you have these rules. Well, this is how it did in the 60s. Well, that's great, but your football stadium wasn't 110,000 seats then. There wasn't such a thing called the SEC network. There wasn't, you know, the ability to buy jerseys all over America. There wasn't all the different things that are going on. So, this really is, though, this isn't the schools. I really should back it up because I'm not even making the argument the correct way or the counterpoint. No one's saying the schools have to pay more money for the players. The schools will continue to pay the same amount. What they were doing was also saying you can't get paid by anybody else to do this. So the basic premise, if this all goes according to, if everyone follows the rules, which of course they won't, but let's say, I mean, you can only write rules to expect people to follow.
Well,
if you're Tagovailoa and you can go get paid $500 on a Sunday to go sit at the Ford dealer in Tuscaloosa,
right,
and you drag a crowd in to sign autographs, that's fine. So that money is not coming from Alabama. You're just you can't stop saying you can't
that's
make
right.
an extra buck somewhere else. So we're not allowed to say, hey, we're the only people who can pay you, and this is the only amount we can pay.
All right, so that brings me to the tie-in with Adidas, like you said, the scheme. You played a prominent role. You were interviewed a lot in this documentary. I learned a lot. I was blown away. I never really knew who Christian Dawkins was. Coming out of that, do you feel sympathy for Christian Dawkins? Do you feel he did something wrong? Is it really the FBI who really jumped the gun on this and we should be angry at?
I think Christian... I don't think Christian needs to go to prison for a year. That I don't think that means Christian is 100%, I don't know, the most innocent figure in the world.
Sure.
Christian was trying. I appreciate Christian. I'm good for an honest hustle, right? And he was a hustler in all the best ways. He's a guy who's like, I have these skills. If you watch the scheme, he's an incredible communicator.
Yep.
I mean, he tells stories well. He's charismatic. He's likable. I mean, he's funny. And you can see why people liked him. And he has an ability to move between social groups and make a lot of different types of people very, very comfortable. And that is a huge skill in the world. That is a salesman. And he felt like I can become something close to the biggest sports agent in the NBA, and I can do it my way. The path that the system tells you to take is go to college, go to law school, and if Christian had done those two things, I think by now, in his late 30s, he'd be on his way to being, with all the other inherent just skills he has, he'd be on his way to being one of the biggest agents in the NBA. He tried to jump the line a little bit, and I appreciate that, just saying, I don't need to go to college. Mm-hmm. I can do this without. And he kind of could, but that's what kind of caught up with him. So I don't know. Christian knew he was violating the system. Mm-hmm. He just didn't respect the system. I don't think anybody thought this was a potential federal offense, and I'm still not convinced it really was, but he's going to prison, so I guess it was.
Well, it reminded me in a way of, you know, Jerry Tarkanian's famous line of, if the NCAA is mad at Duke, they put you on LV on probation. You know, it seemed like they were mad at people, so they had to make an example. It seemed like Christian was the one that they made the example out of, even though they really were after these high-profile coaches.
I think what they started that case because they made a deal with a guy, Marty Blazer, down in Pittsburgh, who's a financial advisor, who stole a few million bucks from his clients and was a real criminal. And he said, look, I'll give you this dirty world of college basketball and agents and all that. And it sounds pretty good when you, I mean, who doesn't think, oh man, the agent business got to be shady, right? Everyone knows that.
Right.
So he's going to give you this whole scheme of stuff. And as they got into it, it wasn't nearly as damning as, they might have thought, and so they arrested the people they could arrest. And one of them was, you know, Christian Dawkins, who's, you know, like I said, a young 20s hustler, if you will. And then, you know, four fairly unknown assistant coaches, a couple minutes, you know, I mean, just nobody. I think at the beginning they thought they were going to get Bill Self and Mike Krzyzewski in cuffs or something. I don't know what they thought.
Right.
But that didn't pan out. So, here's what you got as a case. And it just, the whole thing just, it's the system. Nobody respects the NCAA system, including all the people in the NCAA, including so many of the head coaches and the assistant coaches and the players and the handlers that are all on that front line. And that's why, you know, this idea, it was just a crime without a victim. I mean, Christian Dawkins and these other guys are going away for giving people money, not for stealing anyone's money, but for giving people money. And, I guess there was a violation of some rules, but doesn't really seem like it merits this.
Dan Wetzel joining me here on the Sal Sports and Stuff podcast. He is an author, screenwriter, podcaster, columnist for Yahoo Sports as well. Let's shift to college football. What's your solution for ultimately determining a national champion?
Well, hopefully we have a season.
Yeah.
First. No, I'm only kidding. You know, I've obviously I wrote some books on this. I was a major critic of the bowl championship series and the polls and all of that. And I wanted to give the four-team playoff a chance to get going and see what we're at. I don't want to be one of those people that just, you know, complains, and then once you kind of get what you want, you move on to the next level of complaint, which doesn't really. So I think the four-team's been a big improvement, but I think that the right number, and I used to think it was a bigger number, but now I think it's eight teams. I think if you give all five of the major conferences an automatic bid, it would increase the excitement of the regular season, because now winning the Pac-12 championship, or, you know, a lot of years, even the Big Ten, I think it's been three times the Big Ten champ hasn't made the playoff. The regular season race matters a lot, and so the winner gets an automatic bid. Then you have three at-large, and you have an eight-team playoff. And I would play both the first round and the semifinals on campus.
Mm-hmm.
I would give home field advantage, pretty much the way the NFL does, and then play the championship game at a neutral site. And I think if you do that, it would improve. What's happened with the four-team playoff is the same teams pretty much make it every year, and that has then diminished the importance of football in certain areas of the country, particularly out west, and had recruits flocking to the places where they think they can make the playoff. And if you're a coach and you can't sell the narrative that you can make the playoff if you come here to the University of Oregon or University of Utah, or something like that, it's going to be a struggle. Then, you know, it causes kids to go to all the same places. So you look at the top of the recruiting ranking, and it's Clemson, and it's Georgia, and it's Alabama, and it's LSU, and it's Ohio State, basically. And, five, six, seven schools are getting all the players. And increasingly that includes the kids from out west and even from the Midwest. So I think eight would be really good. I think the on-campus would be phenomenal. No one's ever been to a college football game and said, I wish this was being played on a neutral site at the Alamo Dome or something like that. You know, like you go to Penn State and you're like, this is awesome. What's right. The best part of a Penn State game? The stadium, you know, a pack here, anyway, Ohio Stadium, Tuscaloosa. I mean, so play them on campus and bring home field in and make that chase for be a right now. If you're the one seed or the four seed, there's no advantage. You know, it's just you're in. There's not really an advantage. Four seed has to wear their road uniforms. That's it. The NFL playoffs are phenomenal. They work. It's like I never understood why they were so opposed to having anything that looked like the NFL playoffs.
Do you like the expansion of the playoffs, NFL?
I thought we had it fine, but let's see. I mean, I don't think it's a huge, huge problem. I think like Pittsburgh would have got in last year on a three-game losing streak. I'm not really excited about that. Then again, that first weekend, you have triple headers each time.
Right.
And we would have had like an extra home game at Green Bay and an extra home game with Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City. Like, so I don't think it's terrible. I don't think it was necessary, but, you know, I certainly understand. I understand they need the revenue. So more football is generally not a bad thing. So I just can't can't pound the table on that one.
Well, let's look ahead to 2020 because none of us knows what's going to happen. We hear different reports every day. I know, athletic directors are talking with coaches, commissioners are talking with GMs, all that kind of stuff. We're trying to get all the science involved. They're doing everything they can. At the end of the day, now look, I'm an NFL sideline reporter. I want to be on the sidelines. I want to do my job. I'd love to be in packed stadiums and doing what I normally do on the Buffalo Bills radio network. I think that's more likely than it is college football, considering all the things presidents have to think about with students on campus and stuff like that. Can you envision a scenario in which games are played with no fans or games are, or we don't start a season until after the new year? College?
You know, I agree with you. First of all, I agree with you 100%. NFL is way more likely than college.
Yes.
I mean, college to me is the hardest sport of them all. I've been saying all along, like, golf is the easiest. right?
Yep.
Get 100 guys. They have to be with their caddy. Other than that, I mean, I played golf yesterday. It's not hard. Social distance. You know, you don't have fans on the course. You could have run the Masters the first weekend of April. I get why they didn't, because no one knew what the heck was going on. But you can do this. The hardest sport, college football. 130 teams.
Yep.
In 43 states and different mentalities. You have state schools, elite private schools, military academies, religious institutions. I mean, you got it all. In cities, in country, you know. So I just think it's going to be super hard for all 130 to say we're doing it. I mean, is this even a priority at Rutgers right now?
Right. Yeah, I can't imagine, Dan, any president of any university, like look, as much as football is their lifeblood, in the NFL, it's your business. That's what it is. In college, they do have a student body and other departments to think about.
It's an extracurricular activity, right?
Right.
It's not the activity. The NFL, it's the activity. This is why we're here.
That's right.
No, I agree. But, you know, if you're the president of Kansas State, and I have no idea what, you know, I don't know the stats, and if you know anything, if you hear anything about COVID-19 from me, disregard it. It's completely uninformed. But I'm guessing it's not crushing Manhattan, Kansas, the way it's crushing Manhattan, New York. Right? I've heard nothing. Right. So sometimes you might be like, look, man, we're going to play. Like, our school is going to be fine. We don't have this problem yet. Why wouldn't we go forward with all of our activities? So that's your problem, is how many of these schools can even do it? And then, can you let fans in? Do you want to take that on? I mean, and then here's the other one. Do you want to go?
Right.
Like, how many fans would you, I love the Bills. That's my favorite football stadium in the NFL.
Nice.
And it is a great scene. And you go, yeah, I love going to Bills games. I'll crowd in there, 70,000 or whatever the 10, what's the number there? 70,000?
A little less now, I think, yeah.
Yeah. You know, okay, great. I'll normally do that. Well, maybe you do when the Patriots come, but are you going to do it? You know, like, are you going to do the preseason? Like, yeah, I'll just stay home. I don't need that extra. Like, how many people are going to go? And then, you know, the idea of throwing 100,000 people invite them into your college town from all over. I think the fans is a problem. Now, with the NFL, the TV revenue is a greater portion of the revenue, and you're trying to just make do, and you have billionaire owners, and this is what we do, and it's fair to the players who are going to sign off on this and say, look, I'm making a lot of money. I mean, lots of people have to work right now, and lots of people want to work right now, but, you know, I'm not going to feel that bad for an NFL player that agrees to go do this. But a college guy who's getting tuition, room, and board, and you might have to play in front of an empty stadium, or, you know, this isn't really what I signed up for. I just think this whole thing's going to be very difficult for college football. I don't think you're getting all 130, and then the schedule starts breaking down. You know, even within certain leagues, you're going to have a division. Like, you take the ACC, you know, it may not be a big deal at Clemson and Florida State, but it is at Boston College and Syracuse. It's not a big deal in Nebraska right now. And this all can flip in 3 months too.
Yep,
it could be terrible in Nebraska, not bad in New Jersey. But how do you do this? So I just think college football's got struggles. But I think about 75% of revenue on college campus, college football, is ticket sales, roughly, and then parking and donations, and then the jerseys. You know, they need those events with fans, and if you don't have the fans, then it's a massive losing proposition. I don't know. I mean, I don't want to consider a fall without both college and pro football, but I wonder if we're going to get to that spot by the end of June, and hopefully we have hopefully we are improved dramatically, because it's almost 2 months, still 2 months away when you kind of maybe have to make a decision. And you look back 2 months, it's like early March. Like, we've come a long way in those 2 months, so maybe we come a long way in those, the next two. But, you know, maybe you just sit there and say, we can't do college football next year. We'll come back in 2021.
Amazing. No one knows what's going to happen. I, I do think, though, the NFL is releasing its schedule this week. Now, they have, and I interviewed Mike North a couple weeks ago for this podcast, who is on the schedule-making team, basically. He's one of the guys that heads it. And he said, look, I mean, they're going to do what they're going to do, which is release the schedule. But they will have, I guess, in the back room somewhere, right, some contingency plans. And I have to imagine they'd at least have to be thinking about all the different ways they have to maneuver things around.
Yeah, maybe it's a 12-game season.
Right.
You know, maybe it's like, I've kind of, you know, I get some of this, like Major League Baseball needs the local TV games to make their revenue. And, I've heard this where the NBA should try to get their whole season in, or the NHL. And, you know, I'm kind of like, you know what? What if you just get creative and do something? You know, what if the NBA sits there and says, hey, we can do in 1 month, we could get everybody in here and run a, or we're going to drop to only 8 playoff teams. Or we're going to run a bunch of best of three series. Like, it's not the normal way we do a championship, but we're giving you something, and we're getting something. And I think, you know, we all want a return to normalcy, but, I that is hard. But if you do something fun, you know, what if the NBA was like a – I'm not saying they're going to do this because they'd lose – it's not enough TV number, but imagine they just said we're going to do a, an NCAA basketball-style tournament. It will be done in 3 weeks. We can quarantine the teams in the MGM Grand for 3 weeks, and this is it. It's going to be August Madness. And you go, you know what? That's not really an NBA championship, but this isn't,
right.
This isn't normal, right? So, yeah, we want 16 games. We want a full playoff. We want everything. But if you can buy time and say, we're going to start October 1st, or we're only going to have, 10-game season or something like that, so be it. I'll take that over just, we have to stick to it. So I'm sure everyone's looking for contingency plans, and everyone's kind of holding on right now to, well, this will be normal. It's all right if it's not normal. You know, I wrote a column last week, like, could the SEC just have its season? Let's say it's not as bad in the South and they can somehow pull this off. Well, if they have an 8-game season and have an SEC champion in December and they just, that's it. That's not college football, but it's better than nothing.
No, that's right. And by the way, as I'm talking to you, I just got an alert here. You may have seen as well. Don Shula has passed away as we're recording this. Shula has passed away. That's a very sad news in the sports world.
That is. What a great coach. What a great guy.
Yeah. We just had Daryl Talley on WGR this morning from those 90s Bills teams. And we were actually talking about the rivalries, and we were referencing to the Last Dance and the Bulls and the Pistons. And I went back to the Bills and the Dolphins. And, you know, that's when it was testy. Bills fans really hated Don Shula back in the day. He was on the rules committee. They couldn't beat him. He was terrific at what he did, but he was a thorn in the side of Bills fans for sure.
Yeah. Well, he left a lot of, he ruined a lot of Sundays around the
yes.
NFL through the years. Such a giant figure in football. Right.
And yeah.
The way he carried himself, I just always remember he and, you know, he's a little different than Landry, but growing up, just he and Landry were this kind of like just, I don't want to say stoic, cause he was a little more emotional than that, but just those like, impressive
yep.
figures on the sideline, right? And obviously phenomenal coach and coach of the only undefeated team. Belichick couldn't pull that off.
No, that's right. That's right.
Not easy to have one on Belichick, but he got that one bit. Although only had to play 14 games. So.
Hey, Dan, I want to ask you about the Aaron Hernandez documentary. And you're an executive producer of the Netflix documentary Killer Inside on Aaron Hernandez. So what motivated you to want to be a part of this and do this?
Well, I covered Aaron a little as a player, but then as a, when he became an accused murderer, suspect in the case, I just covered that story, from the start. And my partner on this, Kevin Armstrong, was a writer at the New York Daily News at the time, writer and reporter, and we covered together just from the start, the story, the background, the two murder trials, all the way through to a suicide. But in the middle of it, really during the first murder trial of Odin Lloyd, or the trial of the murder of Odin Lloyd, we thought, this is just, this story is just so amazing. It's so big. And we wanted to do something else, whether it was a book or really try to get a visual medium. You could write the columns we wrote. I remember they were very popular. People were reading, but there's just nothing quite like seeing it. And I thought, you know, it's a documentary, right? To see the trial footage, to see the security footage, to see all that stuff, told the story in a better way, to watch Alexander Bradley testify and see the intensity of that for the people who have seen this movie. So we started, we hooked up with a company called Blackfin out of New York City and started producing, filming, what became this documentary. For one point, it was just a 2-hour film, then it became a 3-part Netflix deal. And, obviously there were still twists and turns to go, including his suicide. So it's the most fascinating story I've covered in a long time, if not ever. And I think obviously the number of people who watched it would agree. It's just an amazing fall for grace and double life. And every time you thought you figured the guy out, you couldn't. Nobody knew Aaron Hernandez. Every single person in his life only knew part of him. There was a secret life on every single guy right up to the end when he commits suicide and stuns everyone.
You know, I mean, as someone, I coached high school football in Florida for a little while, and, you know, never had anybody to the athlete in the level of Aaron Hernandez, but had seen people like that. And one of the things that always came up was, you know, they were enabled a lot, right? And that's one thing I took away from it was, even though he also had, I think, maybe an identity crisis and a lot of secrets, but he never had anybody tell him no. And I know it's hard. You go to these big universities and you're big man on campus, high school and college. Did you get the sense that also played the role into it, just the enablers that just never told him no?
I think it was a big part of it. I think it was a perfect cocktail of problems with him. Again, people say, well, let's blame CTE. Well, right. I don't know, but that probably didn't help. Or let's blame the death of his father. I don't know. His father was the one that would tell him no. He was the one man he feared and the one disciplinarian. And when he passed away when Aaron was 16, that was a big hole in that. And then it was just straight enabling. There was nobody could control Aaron Hernandez because on game day, he delivered. And that's all he was to a lot of those guys. And so you look and sit back now. At Florida, he had disciplinary problems. Didn't matter. He got back on the field. He was injured. He got back on the field. The Patriots, you know, it's pro football.
Yeah.
How's Aaron doing? I mean, I talked to a million. The Patriots are not going to, you know, we're not getting Tom Brady and stuff on Aaron and sit down and talk about it. But talking to so many different Patriots players and former teammates, and all, you know, we thought he was a little wild, seemed a little, but you know what? Practice starts at you know, 8, he's there at 7. You know, he's in perfect shape. He runs his routes. He wanted to win. And it's like, as a pro football, that's really all you're looking for. I'm not going to go out with him because I thought, you know, it might be a bar fight I don't want to be in. I didn't know he's murdering people.
Right.
Okay. You know, but it's just sort of that guy. But I go back to when he was at Florida and he's got Urban Meyer as coach. And this is a kid, he shows up very young, 17. He skips the spring of his senior year of high school, which he shouldn't have done. He needed to screw up slower. This is a guy who actually needed to come in and redshirt for a year.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they bring him in early. So after at January of his senior year, he moves to Florida and enrolls as a college student, which I think for any parent would be like, that's like my kid's got to be super mature to handle that.
Right.
He's not mature, and he's dealing with the death of his dad, and he starts immediately acting out. He needed counseling. He needed, you know, a mental health help. He needed a lot of things. What he didn't need was, great job, run that route again. And it's okay, because look how good you are. And same thing when he goes, 3 years later, he goes to the NFL. He's 20 years old. He declares for the NFL. So young, and then you're thrown in, and you know you work the bill. Like, it's grown man league.
Yeah,
he says this is not. We're not here to hold your hand. You know, you figure it out, and we want you to be good, and we have systems in place. But even then, it was less with the mental health and all of that adjustment. But you're young, and you got 30. You got guys with kids and grown ups, and yep. It's just different. And he's so it was just a terrible mix for him. But I agree, the enabling of this guy's a talent. Let's put him on the field. He's going to win us games, and that is what he always did. But I really go to that Florida part where nobody was looking out for Aaron Hernandez. Nobody was sitting there saying, "Here's a kid who's struggling. We got to do something." And, you know, not just, hey, let's have a meeting and I'll tell you to knock it off. That's not right. How we solve this problem. This guy was crying out for help in every imaginable way, and no one was really helping him.
Highly recommended, by the way. I watched it, Killer Inside, the Netflix docuseries on Aaron Hernandez. I'll wrap up with this, a more positive note. I see you have something going on where people can go and click on your Twitter feed, at Dan Wetzel, and it is for young readers, basically. And it's called Epic Athletes. I'll let you describe this, but this is right up my alley. I have a six-year-old, and he loves sports, and he loves the fact that dad's involved in sports. And, you know, we're always playing games where we're naming teams and players and things like that. So this is right up his alley. And, of course, right now I'm trying myself to limit his screen time, and this is exactly what it says. Tell us about Epic Athletes.
So these books are probably a little too much for a six-year-old.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll get there soon. They're basically your classic sports biographies, maybe 120 pages, 110 pages. I grew up reading these. They kind of got away from publishing them for whatever. But it's really designed for, you know, third through eighth grade, although high schoolers and adults like them too because they're pretty quick read. But they're just sports bios. We have eight of them are out right now. Or seven of them are out right now. It's Stephen Curry, LeBron James, Alex Morgan, the soccer player, Lionel Messi, Tom Brady, Simone Biles, somebody else in this, and Serena Williams. Patrick Mahomes is coming in the summer. Zion Williamson is going to come. I'm actually working on that now. And they're just, you know, real positive stories about leadership and how these guys got there. And there's a real focus on what they were like as middle schoolers, sort of, those age groups, because it's pretty interesting stories. You know, you look at them now and you say, oh my God, Steph Curry, right? He's unbelievable, two-time MVP. And you go, well, when he was in sixth grade, it was, you're too small. You're not going to be that good. You know, and you're not going to be as good as your dad.
Right.
Tom Brady, freshman year of football, was the backup quarterback on his freshman team. He didn't play a single snap. Didn't play. He wasn't any good. And the team stunk. And the only reason he became the starter as a sophomore on the JV was because the guy who beat him out as a freshman quit because he thought, I'm not going to give up on football. I'm not any good. I'm going to concentrate on basketball. Right? So how does Tom Brady deal with that? Now you look and go, oh, he got six Super Bowls. You know, he fought. He didn't quit at Michigan. He fought to stay and try to make it. I know Tom Brady's not the most popular guy.
Right.
Bills fans, but right. His story's great. Serena Williams, right? Phenomenal. Yeah, well, when she was 12, your sister's better. Your older sister's the good one. You're the other one, right? Real things that you can understand and most kids, you know, can relate to. How do you fight through that? How do you become the best person you can be? So they're very positive stories. They're all great athletes. And, but they're kind of designed to read. They're not hard reads, and they're designed for those age groups. They've been super popular. So as much as I do murders and murder documentaries,
that's right.
And controversies, I need
scheming the government and college. That's right, FBI investigations. Yeah. Well, I will tell you this. I think I speak for many people in Western New York who say we can't wait for the day you're writing about Josh Allen with one of these books and
fun.
How he was not recruited to be a Division I athlete for a few years.
But that's the story. You know these guys,
yeah.
Well, on a personal basis, and we see the heroes, right?
Yeah.
That come out of the tunnel and the shoulder pad. They all have a backdrop. And they, you know, even like LeBron James, right? LeBron James, first time he ever played any kind of organized football, is a great story. Found this guy. This guy coached Pop Warner, whatever it was called, football in Akron, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And he, in the neighborhood, he shows up at this park, basically, this housing project. He's looking for kids to play because this is not a neighborhood where mom and dad come down and just sign you up. So he didn't have enough players. So he goes to this park. And LeBron and his friends are there, and he says, you know, how old are you guys? And they tell him, and goes, well, I got this football league, and I'm trying to get some players. And he says, line up and run. And they all run. And LeBron's the biggest and the fastest. And he says, son, you're on the team.
It's that simple.
And they go, how good do you think he was? He goes, I know football. He goes, right that moment, I said, that kid's going to play in the Big Ten playing football. Like, that's how good LeBron James was, right?
That's great. Hey, Dan.
He's like, how old are you again? He's like 9, you know, and so, but even then, LeBron's story, like, I mean, he's moving around. He had to live in different families. His mom had tons of struggles. He has no dad. And then his loyalty to his local high school and all. I mean, there's just these great stories of, like, it's a very indeed. So even the ones that are like, yeah, well, LeBron was going to be great no matter
right.
what. True, but he overwent so many struggles. So they're very positive, and it's been rewarding to write.
Well, Dan, thanks. I've been an admirer of your work for a while, and I really enjoyed the scheme and the Aaron Hernandez doc. There's a lot more out there that people can enjoy as well. You can follow Dan on Twitter, by the way, at Dan Wetzel. But thanks for doing this today. I hope that you and your family stay safe, and maybe we can catch up sometime when there's actually a football season to talk about that.
Love to do it. Love to do it. Thanks, Sal. Appreciate you having me on.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What you're listening to presumably doesn't suck, so neither should your sound system. Sonos lets you listen seamlessly from room to room. Same great sound, expertly tuned, astonishingly clear. It's not magic, but it's not not magic.